And hello from Arizona today. This is your host, Celeste Duckworth, and this is Living Vertical Radio. Our guest today is going to be CEO and author Bilal Alaji. First, though, let me get to our announcements. We want to thank our sponsor, 3E Web Media, located in the United Kingdom, and they empower your brand to tell its story and attract, engage, and empower your audience. You can find them at their website, 3ewebmedia.com. Our other sponsor is One Sure Sign Mobile Notary in Frisco, Texas. And they are considered fast and reliable and affordable. They are a mobile notary, and I've seen some of their reviews, which are great. Their website is at one-sure-sign.com, and their phone number is 678-231-0704. So if you need a notary, they are 7 days a week. You can meet with them and get your paperwork notarized. So our experiences from childhood to adulthood shape our identity. But at any point in time, we can make changes that reshape our identity. Realizing that we have a personal power is a liberal process, but certainly not one that's free of anxiety. When we challenge our negative sense of identity, we can expect a degree of backlash, fear, and resistance. And this is why I'm so happy to have our guest today. Bilal Alaji is an entrepreneur, a mentor, an investor, and motivational speaker. He is also someone who helps transform and educates others with his personal story. His book is called This Ain't My Life. In it, through his own narrative, he shares his story to inspire others to live their best life. He has faced hardships that include a difficult childhood, as well as unique challenges as a Black Muslim man. Wildly creative, he is a key figure in the music industry, and he has performed at such venues as the world-famous Apollo Theater and Nets Arena. He also worked with artists like Shanice, LL Cool J, and Big Daddy Kane, and Gang Starr. So we'd like to welcome Bilal Alaji today and talk about his books and some of his perspectives in writing that book. So welcome today, Bilal.
Really, really excited about being here on the show.
Great. I'm thankful that you're on the show today. I've kind of browsed through your book, and it's a really good story. I had a lot of questions, but I don't think we'll be able to get all those questions in this broadcast
right.
for you. So we tried to pick the ones that we really, really could get you in on and share with our audience today. So
sure.
Let me ask you a question, because I like to ask people when they write a book. How long did it take you to write this book?
My writing process was just shy of a year. So
okay.
It was, between 11 months to 12 months, just buckling down and writing for about 2 hours a day.
Oh, okay. So you really stuck to a stringent schedule then?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And was there anything about writing this book that you thought maybe you didn't want to put that in there, or is the book just very transparent about your life story?
No, absolutely. There are a lot of elements of the book that I did not want to share, and
mm-hmm.
I struggled with that. But when writing, everything was flowing, and I was being so honest even in my writing that it was very
mm-hmm.
hard for me to start editing and shying away from the truth of my story. And I also felt
mm-hmm.
that it would take away from the validity of the story, because when you are very candid about what's going on, not candid in a sense of just like being brute, but candid in
mm-hmm.
a sense of being very careful with how you represent this beautiful story, then you can portray it in a very, it's like emotional, but at the same time, it's very relatable. And so I wanted for a lot of people who shares my background, they share these similar experiences. I didn't want to shy away from the honesty of it because I thought that it wouldn't make it as sincere. It would almost take away its validation.
Okay.
And
all
to
right.
be honest with you, I'm not really a person that likes to share my personal business. I'm very private and closed. And that's why this book, for me, I sometimes just sit and laugh about it because I'm like, I'm writing this story called This Ain't My Life when it's an oxymoron because it actually is my life. And
right.
I don't even, I'm like this private person that doesn't like telling his business, but yet all my business is out there. So if someone would have asked me when I was younger if I would have done something like this, it would have been the farthest thing from my mind. But I felt a strong divine presence that influenced me to put myself in this space, to open up this platform. And I felt that I was chosen to do that, and I needed to be strong enough, you know, because I could represent it the way it needed to be represented. And I chose to accept that challenge. And so, you know, I put all the bygones to the side, and I just, you know, I looked at how my story affected me. And I knew that there was a lot of power in there where I could be a person of change and influence.
Okay. And so you declared this book to be called This Ain't My Life. And how did that become the name of your memoir? Where did that title come from?
It came from just a lot of the struggles that I was facing within my life at various different points of my life. You know, whether I was in my child or teen or early 20s, I would constantly make these declarations, you know, saying that, man, this can't be how life is for me. You know, this can't be my life. This ain't my life. And this went on for so long that I began to realize that it was like a mantra for me. You know, it was like my own personal affirmation that I would say that no one else knew about, but it was a way that got me out of, you know, muddy waters and helped me to see the silver lining. So, you know, as I got a little bit further and deeper into, you know, my process of transformation, I knew that this declaration was not just my own. It was a declaration that I needed to share. And I needed to help others who were facing, you know, a lot of hardships, incorrect thinking, perception challenges, all types of challenges that we face that cause us to be away from our vision, causes us to be away from our destiny and life purpose. You know, this affirmation, this ain't my life, kind of resets you and puts you back in focus. And so that's what it did for me. And so I knew it was like, that's what you need to do. You need to share that.
And it is a strong declaration. I mean, it really is a powerful one as well. When you're, you know, going through something and you just say that to yourself, and you're right. It's a reset, you know, to whatever you're going through. It definitely just those words is a reset. So tell me now, you know, you were in the music world, you were a key figure in the music industry, and you had performed with such, you know, these wonderful artists that I know, that I grew up with and love. So I'm thinking that, you know, when you were in the music industry, that this was another avenue for you to give your message. How different was it being in music to turning around to the creative part of writing?
Well, that's the thing. I think that they were never split apart. They were never like disenfranchised. I think they were always complementary of each other. It's just that in that phase of my life, I expressed it through musical form. And so, you know, I always was a writer. I always had writing ability, and I always expressed myself through writing. But you know, in my younger years, that was the way that I chose to express myself. It was easier mm-hmm. for me to just, you know, I wrote a song called Committed. And in this song Committed, with I'm talking about my relationship challenges and how, you know, as a young man, I'm struggling with this woman. I'm struggling with keeping everything together. And I wrote it in a musical form. And, you know, I mm-hmm. wrote other tracks like that as well to kind of express where I was and what I was feeling at that particular time frame. But, you know, mm-hmm. as I got wiser and I started having more experiences and life stepped in and taught me some lessons, it just sharpened my writing sword and it got my pen a lot more sharper, and I was able to, you know, delve in deeper with a lot more introspection about what I was going through and what I was experiencing, and coming from a more adult phase, a more adult perspective, you know, I was able to take those same experiences and now, you know, exploit it and explain it in a way where it had a lot more context to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was going through the book and I was reading about your life growing up and the dynamics of your dad and your mom and even your sisters, what do you think, you know, how do you think a young man truly, truly overcomes his environment to become, and I'm using the word successful, but success is so many different things.
That's right.
And you know, some religions call it a generational curse. I call it generational pathology. What do you think is probably the strongest thing that helped you make a turnaround and for you to become transparent enough about your life to write about it?
You know, that's the thing about, I have in chapter 14, it's called Triple Darkness. And Triple mm-hmm. Darkness represents a space in your life that is so dark that you really can't recover from. It's a place of high anxiety, a place of depression. You know, it's a place mm-hmm. where you just really, you don't see any more options. Like you're out of mm-hmm. options. You're in a place that is just too dark. And so at mm-hmm. this moment, the only thing that can happen is transformation. The only thing that can happen is a change. And mm-hmm. everything for us starts with the way that we think and the way that we see things. Because mm-hmm. the moment we change how we see things, then we can change its outcome. And so for me, that's what happened. You know, as you were reading in the introduction of the book, it talks about how I looked at my father as a superhero, and my father mm-hmm. let me down so many times. And because of that, it started to mold and shape the way that I was viewing my hero. Mm-hmm. And it started to also mold and shape what kind of hero I wanted to be. And wait, where was my hero coming from? I had to even notice that there was a woman that was starting to mm-hmm. become a hero when I wanted the man to be the hero. But the woman was the one that mm-hmm. was showing me the hero qualities. So I always say that the universe never leaves you without. There's everything you ever need is always right in front of you. All the tools that every human on this planet needs is there. It's just that we want it to be where we want it to be. We want it placed exactly where we want it placed. We don't want to have to feel like, oh, it's not what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be my father, but it turned out to be my mother. And as long as I was willing to accept the tools that were right there and I was willing to use what was available to me, then I was going to be able to be okay on my journey. So for all the young brothers who are out there who are looking for a way to come out of their situation, I would say that they just need to be open and they need to be willing to change their situation. And changing that situation is a process. It doesn't happen overnight. I talk about it in the epilogue. And within the epilogue, I go through this really wonderful, in-depth process of how change is going to happen in your life. It starts with how you think, starts with how you feel, it starts with what you perceive and what you desire. Because the minute you desire it and believe it, then you can achieve whatever it is that you are desiring. But with that being said, your life is also going to change. All the things that you were comfortable with, all the things that you thought is going to be crushed in your life. They're going to be broken apart. And you're going to have new experiences and new things that you're going to have to, you know, associate with. But it's all good because it's teaching you something new and it's elevating you. It's bringing you to a new position in your life. And so that's the same thing that happened for me, you know, whether it was dogma, religion, whether it was, you know, being Black and, you know, relationships and what I went through with women and siblings, all of these things had to be shattered, completely shattered. And I had to begin a new reconstruction of what all those things were defined in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that, you know, that especially men need to be willing to transfer, well, be willing to be vulnerable. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, though, but there are some unique challenges, I believe, for Black American men more than other cultures. So what do you think some of the unique challenges are for Black American men compared to other cultures? Because in some sense, I think it's a little bit harder to get to that point of vulnerability for them.
It is. And I think the biggest obstacle for us is that we're not around. We're absent.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
That absence is where a lot of the disconnect comes in. Because young girls mm-hmm. out here are not learning or assimilating with what that good man is. So now this
mm-hmm.
young girl has to learn that information from a woman. The woman has to tell
mm-hmm.
her, oh, this is what a good man is. Or she's learning it from TV or some type of music artist has explained what, you know, this man should do for her and what a good man is. That narrative needs to come directly from the source. It doesn't need to
mm-hmm.
be coming from any other type of stereotypes or any type of information. It needs to come directly from the beginning, her inception.
Mm-hmm.
And when men are present, and I talk about this in the book about how I go through this wonderful, it's probably at least 3 or 4 chapters long. I talk about my entire court process of gaining custody of my children. And I talk about how
mm-hmm.
women do their best to keep the children away from the father. And, you know, so
mm-hmm.
what a lot of men do, in particular Black men, they end up just giving up. And it just becomes this arduous process. The state municipalities, they actually side with the women and they make it so difficult for men to actually be a part of the child's life when all of this is taboo. I don't agree with child support and the way that it's enforced. I'm not saying that it doesn't have its good connotation behind it. You know, it started out, you know, with really good premise, but now it's abusive, and it's abusive to the point where men, they don't want to deal with it. And in
mm-hmm.
not wanting to deal with the system, they end up not dealing with their child. And when they're not dealing
mm-hmm.
with their child becomes very vulnerable to a lot of other influences. And those influences
mm-hmm.
is what's continuing the cycle in the Black communities. So I want to see that change. I want to see us as Black men redefine, become a little bit stronger with, and all of this can change through dialogue, believe it or not. Just simple dialogue
mm-hmm.
changes this because,
mm-hmm.
you know, as I've done some other men's group sessions, we as men of color had a program, Still Start Sharp and Steel. And as we were talking, we realized that just talking to having 1 to 2 or 3 generations have this conversation, you begin to enlighten the generation under you. And the generation before you is able to share so much information that these gaps are now closed and they're not as wide as they once were. And that
mm-hmm.
information allows that next generation to make better choices. So those
mm-hmm.
better choices allow us to now function better as a community. And so
mm-hmm.
men inside of their vulnerability, what I've assessed as the biggest problem is lack of dialogue. And this is where women shine. Women shine, and we need to take a page out of your book, and we need to, you know, sit down as men and realize that this vulnerability that we're going through, it is a way for us to seek strength through it. It's a way for us to not mm-hmm. feel that being macho and having this macho connotation will take away from our strength. You know,
mm-hmm.
life happens, things happen, and you're not going to always be able to be strong in every moment to the point that you are going to escape pain. You're going to escape
mm-hmm.
struggle. No, it's just mm-hmm. how you go about dealing with that. And the more that we can lean on mentors, lean on influencers, lean on a social network of, I always tell everyone in life should have at least three people in their lives that when they make major decisions, they go and talk to these three people who know them very well and can help them construct the right decision before they go out and make it. And this should be no different for men.
Excuse me. That's a powerful statement because, you know, just listening to you talk, and I've had these, you know, thoughts in my head. I don't agree with the child support system. I think there's a lot of systems that need to be shattered because you do have more and more men that have custody of their children. It's not,
correct.
You know, it was a time when, and it wasn't a true time, but there was a time when it was thought the mother was the better parent. But then again, you know, as I teach my kids, you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. And so you don't know if the mother
That's right.
is the best parent. And I think that, you know, the courts just automatically assumed that. But then you had all these other things that came into place. Then you had, you know, child abuse. Then you had, all these other systems that now, you know, are kind of piled up in this, you know, whole thing. And you're absolutely right. Dialogue is important. And I always say, you know, that we have to be able to sit down and have a dialogue, even if it makes us mad. Okay, even if
that's
you're
right.
mad and angry, that's part of having the dialogue because you can't get it out unless we're willing to sit there and go through the anger and listen to the pain of other people. And it's so interesting because we talk about we want these systems, you know, trashed and rebuilt, or, you know, we want them, you know, there might be a need for them, but then in another sense, they're just, you know, I never understood the whole logic about locking up a father for not paying child support so he just loses his job. That doesn't, I never understood that logic. And so my thing is that we as a community, we have programs, we have reality programs about how to date, we have programs about how to be everything except having a program about dialoguing how we can change some things, you know. And I find that really interesting, but you're so right about that, because I always say I feel that there's a lot of angry people. And one of the things I was reading when you were talking about getting your divorce, and I see this in just how your ex-wife just would not communicate with you, you know.
Right.
And it takes a strong person to keep going, you know. I mean, you didn't give up, you know. You just like, okay, I'm going to figure another way, but I'm going to get this done, okay? And you did that, and you're right. So many people give up, and, you know, used to be, my aunt used to say to me, when you get to the part and they tell you can't do it, she said, change the conversation and ask them, how should I do it? She said, and a lot of
That's
times
right. how
you
can
get the
it be
answer.
Done? That's right.
Right, you get the answer, and then you can move forward. So, you know, good for you, because I know it, the struggles of Black men. And now my thing is that we really have to change the narrative, and we really have to have that dialogue, because now I feel like a lot of people are kind of living in a virtual world and thinking, you know, and thinking that the virtual world gives them this power that's just not there, you know, that is really not there. So one of the things I
You're
also
so right.
is that, yeah, and I just, you know, I've talked to a lot of men, and I know some great dads, okay? I know some great dads, but, you know, I'm a realistic person too. I know some great dads that don't necessarily know how to raise their kids. They have the desire and the want to, and, you know, but you're right. Women, you know, as women, we're so social, we'll go out and look for help. We don't mind sitting down and talking. We understand we're the nurturers, and so we're thinking about we have to do the best thing for our family no matter what it is. But men are so silent about a lot of things. So how do you think we can get men to start talking more?
I think the very first thing is to just change, like you said, that narrative of what it means to even have a conversation. Because, mm-hmm. you know, remember, as a little boy, we grew up with heroes. Randy Macho mm-hmm. Man Savage. Listen to the name, Macho Man. You had mm-hmm. Burt Reynolds. And you had, you know, all of these characters that basically represented being macho and tough and strong. And these guys were tough as iron. You never saw them going through anything that made them infallible. And so, mm-hmm. you know, as a little boy, I remember being a little boy, and there was literally men who would tell you, they would say, men don't cry. That mm-hmm. was literally what they said. Men don't cry.
Mm-hmm.
And so when mm-hmm. you're a boy and you're hearing this and you're watching all of these men who you've never seen cry, they never had a moment of weakness, and then you're watching on TV and you're seeing all these superheroes and characters that never go through anything that represents being vulnerable, then you begin to believe that's what I am and that's what I need to become. And mm-hmm. when you go through life, and especially when you don't have that support system, so now this makes it even, now we're going even deeper. So you don't have the support system. So now your superhero, which would be your father, is not there. And you're growing mm-hmm. up in a single parent household with a woman who she to you is not your superhero, but you're willing to accept it because you're like, she's there. You know, I'll take what I mm-hmm. can get, but that's not your superhero. And then you're, mm-hmm. you go out in the community and you're kind of looking for other superheroes. And a lot of your friends, their fathers are not there. So you're lucky mm-hmm. if you find one mm-hmm. guy in the community that someone can view as a superhero, but he's overwhelmed and he's just trying to live his life and take care of his family. So you don't want to be a burden to him. So you mm-hmm. go through trying to figure it out on your own, and you do the best that you can, mm-hmm. flipping pages out of everywhere and taking all this information from all these different sources, and you kind of construct this board of what you think a man should be. And then you get mm-hmm. into your deeper senses of life, and now you got to deal with a family. You got to deal with a child. You got to deal with a woman, which you don't even really know how to do that because you didn't have any instruction from an older man who could walk you through some of these phases that he already experienced. So this gets very complex very quickly, and it kind of mm-hmm. spirals into this real, you know, macro problem. And to deal with it on just a micro level, men just have to change how they view having conversation and dialogue. Having conversation, mm-hmm. having dialogue does not make you weak. It does not right. make you a punk. It does not mm-hmm. make you somebody that can't express or get his way, and you have lost your sense of manhood because you sat down with a woman or you sat down with a child and listened to them. You're mm-hmm. not going to mm-hmm. always be mm-hmm. right. You're not going to always have the right perspective, and you can learn. You can learn from mm-hmm. everyone. And I think that this was the biggest, biggest mistake that was made inside of man teaching. And I'm here mm-hmm. as a man myself, willing and able to change that type of thinking and saying, no. Yes, we have mm-hmm. a lot to offer, but we need to be better listeners. We need to use emotional intelligence. We need to be able to be leaders by being able to sit down and hear from others. And I believe that once we are able to do that, we will hear our children better. We will have a better influence on our communities. We will have a better influence on these little boys out here who really need hugs, and they need someone to tell them that they matter and their thoughts are good and they do have a good skill set. We need to stop as men feeling like we're the only ones that need to be in positions of power, and we need to start training our young brothers for these positions, to letting them have some sense of, you know, a future that they can live up to. And this all starts with just talking.
Well, what do you think some of the misconceptions that are, you know, there? I know there's some things that unite us spiritually, but what are the misconceptions in religion that can be also a factor in, you know, how men or people as a whole, families as a whole think. I know that, you know, one of the biggest influences on our culture was, you know, go to church. You know, we go to church.
Right.
But, you know, there was a lot of things I used to, you know, ask my mom, well, why do they say that? And, you know, it's like, how is that going to help me? Because it was always such a unattainable type thing. Because, you know, it's always, you know, God can do this and God can do that. But when I was growing up, I'm like, well, where is God? You know, and how, you know, some of the things they used to say is that, how is that going to help me? How do you think that affects us, you know, growing up? And what do you think the common thing in spirituality that does unite us?
So, you know, I'm sure as you read the book, I come from a Muslim background. And
right.
My Muslim background, I learned as I got, like, into my teens and early 20s, I really began to see how similar the Black experience really was. It had nothing
mm-hmm.
to do with whether you said Allah. I have friends who were Jehovah's Witness. I have friends who were Baptist. When you talk about religion and you talk about how you look at how God has structured religion, because in Islam, the structure of the household is exactly the same structure as it is in Christian faith. It starts out with man is the head of the household, the mate and a support leader, and then you have the children. But everything's, and especially in the times of turmoil when you feel like your family is most fragile, and then all you're doing is you're getting that power. And we're not spending so much time because religion, everyone's looking
mm-hmm.
and not
right.
looking for a commonality. And that's all when I went through all of the different theological forms of religion. It's,
mm-hmm.
we look at Abraham this way, and the Muslims look at Abraham this way, and, you know, Abraham is the father of all three religions, but yet we have three different founding religions off of the same one man who thought the same way. So
right.
spirituality puts us back into a driver's seat where we are dealing more directly with God within our own selves. And that's why the spiritual journey for me, it really just skyrocketed. It took off
mm-hmm.
so strongly because it, context, literally every day harnessing your own power, and you're using your own power to illuminate the rest. It's just that we're
right.
going to compound and get to a deeper place. That's all. You know, we want to find the fastest route to getting to that source of power. And
okay.
you don't need to have someone else that you pray to get there. You don't need to make all the offerings. You don't need to necessarily make all of the trainings and worship shops that you thought you needed to make. A lot of this is within you. And that's
mm-hmm.
the mistake that all of us were making. We were always looking outside, looking for a pie in the sky, looking for this fallen ship, looking for everything when it was right there in front of you. All that power God has given you. And I talk about that in my book. I talk about in the epilogue, I talk about how all the power that I ever needed lied dormant right inside of me. And I needed to just,
okay.
you know, align
Activate
my teaching
mm-hmm.
and align.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Align your understanding, because everything you went through in life, it was to get you somewhere. So it's not to say that religion didn't have a purpose. What did religion do? Religion opens your mind to spirituality and to a higher divine power. Religion
mm-hmm.
Kind of made you a little bit more disciplined. You were able to
right.
refuse and
mm-hmm.
refute certain things in your life that you would have not been able to do had religion not came into your life. You were able
mm-hmm.
to form a connection with other souls that thought and felt the same way. And you were able to grow with them. And the funny thing about religion is when you're in a religion, it's funny because a person could disagree with you and they can see a verse or something that God said so differently from you. And because you believe the same way, you're more open to listening to them. You're like, oh, okay.
Right.
You know, Sister,
right.
Sister Tammy
mm-hmm.
sees this a little different. Let me hear what Sister Tammy got to say. But because I'm Muslim
mm-hmm.
and I don't agree with what you said, I could literally be saying the same thing Sister Tammy's saying, but because I
right.
have a different faith, you close your ear to it. And I find that so
Absolutely.
Interesting with all
yeah.
religions and all faiths. Like, they all have this closed ear, blind eye to someone who thinks a little differently than them, not realizing that that's what they probably needed to hear at that moment to open up their perspective and help them see a context a little bit deeper. But because we don't share the same faith, I can't hear you. I can't hear what you're saying. I'm sorry. And so that, you know, that's what religion.
No, you're right. You're right when you're right what you're saying when you said I can't hear you. You know, absolutely. Well, I wanted to ask you about there's a section where you're talking about going quitting school, and there was something that you said that really struck me because I've never heard it like this. But I remember my days of signing up for the military. I went to sign up. But I like what you said here. You said, but I like my life. And I wonder, you know, how many young men were, you know, talked into going into the military versus, you know, making a change in their life or just living their life, how that would have been different for them. How do you feel that it would have been different for you if you had continued going to school?
Man, I think a lot of things would have been different. I'm not sure, you know, because one thing I don't do is I really try my best to not live in regret and live in a thing, a space of what if, because the reality is that if it were meant for you, it would have went that way. And when you're dealing with such a powerful universe that knows how to align life and elements so perfectly, who's to say I wouldn't have landed exactly where I am today with just a couple of sprinkles of different experiences? So regardless of what I was thinking and feeling at that time, that young man that was speaking that said, but I like my life, the reason why I made that statement was because I really wanted the reader to understand how much of a threshold my father had on me and what I was thinking, how much religion had a threshold on me and what I was thinking and feeling. I really, you know, still to this day, I have this very strong sense of pleasing my parents and making my parents proud. And that was because that was instilled in me. That was something that they ingrained in me from childhood, and it never went away. And so my sense of purpose got lost. It was like I was crying out as a little boy saying, but this is something that I want to do. You know, I kind of like this. But it was like, no, you need to go this way. You know, you're not making good choices. You're hanging out with the bad people. And what was the real reason? I mean, let's talk about it. Now that, you know, I am where my dad was, I'm looking at everything so differently, and I'm realizing that my father made a lot of those choices, and he said a lot of those things to me out of fear. It wasn't much of wanting to be the wanting to see the best for me. He didn't really sit down and look at my skill set. He didn't see where my strengths lie and what are my weaknesses. It was out of fear. It was fear of how he would be perceived, fear that he was like, oh, he's not going to make it. But if you're truly a person of God, then you should have said to yourself, I instilled every piece of truth into this boy. I did everything that I could. God, it's up to you now to carry him and deliver him. Isn't that what was said when Moses' mother cast him into the into the river when they was looking for the little baby boy to kill? They said, cast Moses into the river and he will be safe. So my father didn't do that. He didn't even follow his own scriptures. And so I, as a young man, I was able to realize that. I was able to interpret that because a lot of things we do, we like to put all these connotations and say, oh, I did it for the best interest of you. Oh, I did it because, you know, I thought this would really help you along your path. But no, you really did it because you were scared. You did it out of fear. You did it because you didn't know any other options and you didn't have any other answers. But God is the most powerful. God delivers all. God can deliver any and everyone he wants. He can transform whatever he wants in life. And I was part of that transformation project. And so now looking back at it, you know, me saying, but I like my life. God was like, you know, that's why I delivered you. That's why you never had anything to be afraid of or to fear. Because I brought you full circle right back to where you were destined to be. And although mm-hmm. others may have been scared, others may have thought this, and others may have thought that, I didn't feel that way.
Okay. All right. Okay. So tell me about Illustrious Shoes.
Yes, Illustrious Shoes. So Illustrious Shoes is a wonderful online shoe store that, you know, it comes from a special place for me because I talk about in the book how in my early 20s, that was like one of the first businesses that I opened as on my own.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. yeah, it was a shoe store. And I talk about, you know, what this shoe store meant for me and why I was attempting to even do the business. But I come from a family of entrepreneurs. I come from, you know, a family of people who opened various different businesses. I worked in the businesses as a child. So it just kind of poured right out of me. And it was something that, you know, it seemed seamless for me to do. And so when mm-hmm. I was going through such a rough patch in my life where I just saw no more light and I reached that triple darkness phase, and then the reconstruction of my life began as I obtained my MBA, the biggest project that really lit up my soul and brought some kind of sunshine to me was to kind of go back to that day of happiness where I felt so good mm-hmm. embarking on that business. And what I did was I mm-hmm. just reconstructed the business. I put together a whole new business plan, and I went out and established this online shoe store called Illustrious Shoes.
Okay. All right. And so now, how do you take This Ain't My Life, and how do you work it with how do you work the message with working with young people, and you know, and how can we communicate with young people the importance of connecting to their emotional intelligence?
That's a real good question, but one that is very necessary. I just did a radio show 2 days ago called Street Corners, and you know, it's for children who are at risk within the Harlem mm-hmm. area in New York. And one of the young gentlemen that was on the show with me, he was so inspired by what I was saying. He began to share his experience about going through darkness in his life. And this young brother was talking about how things just were so bleak for him that he really couldn't see a way out. And as I was just listening to him, as he's pouring his heart out over the radio, I began to share with him that it wasn't his fault. And I began mm-hmm. to share with him that this is why men need to talk. This is why the Black community needs to start exposing all of its ailments so that it really can heal. You know,
right.
I spent mm-hmm. a lot of time talking about men, but within the book, I really begin to talk about the women in the book as well.
Women.
And I talk about
absolutely.
How these life partners that I had were abused. And they mm-hmm. they suffered molestation. They suffered rape. How can I expect a woman who suffered molestation and rape to love me?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are mm-hmm. real serious problems that are going on in our community, and we're just patching them up, trying to, you know, put a Band-Aid on people and put them back into the trenches. No, we
mm-hmm.
have to do better. And this doesn't, mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit here and just blame men and it's all a male problem. No, this is a problem within our communities. And whether we're dialoguing
mm-hmm.
with each other or we're dialoguing with those who are in pain, we have to do better, and the onus really is on us. And those of us who know
mm-hmm.
better really do need to do better. And so for today's youth, they don't see us doing better. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
when we're coming to talk to them, we're talking with a forked tongue to them. We're talking under a premise of, you know, a fallacy. You know, they don't really
mm-hmm.
see what we're talking about. And so because
right.
we're not out
mm-hmm.
there living it and doing it, we're not going to get
mm-hmm.
any real reaction and support from them. It's only going to come
mm-hmm.
when we really mean it, when we really buckle down and get in the trenches and we get out there and we start not only talking but showing them. So as this young
mm-hmm.
man is listening to me on the radio and I'm talking, he's starting to get emotional on the radio, and he's saying, wow, this book, he said, I really didn't I didn't sit here at this station thinking that this book would mean this much to me and that you would have mm-hmm. this voice and be able to talk to me in a way where your experiences and what you went through can help me to come out of my experiences. And he said, it's just profound that you even chose to do that, because he said, we do need to hear those stories. We need to hear what it's like to go through those relationship problems. We do need to hear what it's like to go through the court system. We do mm-hmm. need to hear what mm-hmm. it's like to be a victim of child support. We do mm-hmm. need to hear what it's like to not have that father around. And he said, it's crazy because you made different choices than I did. But had I read this book and had I been able to listen to you, I probably could have made some better choices. That's what this mm-hmm. whole book is all about. The book is about mm-hmm. just rechanging that narrative, rechanging the perception, reevaluating what a strong man is, because I don't look to myself as being a weak man, but I went through some mm-hmm. things where I felt weak. And because of mm-hmm. that, it made me stronger. You know, every mm-hmm. fighter that get in the ring don't win every fight. And it's funny because mm-hmm. males, we could see that with no problem. That's an analogy every mm-hmm. man understands. He could, you know, right. Mike Tyson lost the fight, but we don't see Mike Tyson as being weak. We like, oh, man, right. we'll get him next time. Right? Mm-hmm. We never said, mm-hmm. oh, Mike Tyson lost. He's a punk. He ain't, you know, he's, oh, my God, right. he's the weakest guy I've ever mm-hmm. known because he lost one fight. No, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. We continue to hold him up, and we continue to support him. We rally behind mm-hmm. him and say, all right, next time you could do it. Muhammad Ali lost mm-hmm. plenty of fights, but after every fight, he came back, and he was strong, and he's known as the greatest mm-hmm. boxer to ever do it because of that. We were mm-hmm. able to see him in vulnerable points of his life, and because mm-hmm. of how he rebounded, because of the choices he made after not going through the war and standing up for his principles and losing to Frazier after claiming to beat him, and then he goes back and beats him twice in a row. We said, man, this guy really is a champion. But you mm-hmm. gotta be able to do that in your own personal life as well. You have to be the mm-hmm. champion of your life. You have to be the one mm-hmm. who can fall down and can tell everybody, you know what, I made a mistake. Yes, I didn't make the best choice. Yeah, I could have did better with that. Oh, I didn't see that coming. Ooh, I didn't have a plan for that. All of those mm-hmm. can be needs improvements or they can be mistakes in your life, but they don't need to define you. They don't need to be mm-hmm. the point in your life where you can't rebound and you can't allow something better to come into your life, which really is just a better way of thinking and executing your plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I do love what you said. Go ahead. Well, you know, I appreciate what you just said. I mean, we're always working in our communities. I often wonder how we got so far away from our elders who were the superheroes. I mean, you know, we had some elders who were superheroes, but the generations, it seems, have gotten watered down. And we have, you know, I hear older men say, you know, I'll say, well, how come you didn't correct that person? And they'll say, well, you know, he's not my son, or, you know, they make a lot of excuses. And I tend to believe that as even, you know, as we become elders, that it's our responsibility to do the correction. I think that also, you know, part of that, when we talk about emotional intelligence, part of that, I don't think our children that do get these great benefits and these great starts and these great allocates, I don't think they understand just how much of their teaching the teaching they've received and how they've changed their perspective has allowed those doors to be opened for them. So, you know, I don't know why the watering down now. I hear, you know, I hear too many complaints between our people rather than solutions and rather than dialogue. And I wish we could have more dialogue.
I would like to read this caption from you from the book. It's on page 302 okay. in the epilogue. And it states, okay. the gap between elders and young people is widening. There isn't enough dialogue. Elders don't share their wisdom, and young people don't listen or respect their elders. Elders look at the youth as renegades, not understanding that it is this energy that affects change. We have to do better. Let us let go of our perceptions and become agents of change.
And that is a really good message to leave to our listeners today. So what events do you have coming up, Bilal, and what is your next project?
I have quite a few things coming up. I'm going to be in California in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to be a guest speaker, and I'm going to be attending a writer's conference and basically just, you know, teaching others how to write characters and memoirs that, you know, the reader can identify with without tarnishing and without blemishing the character in its totality. I'm also going to I'm looking forward to that. You know, there's going to be, you know, quite a lot of influences there within the industry. And, you know, just being able to share my story, you know, and me being a protagonist, how I was able to tell such a heartfelt story without, you know, damaging my father or damaging, you know, the other characters in the book, is really a unique way of doing it. You know, it takes a certain skill set to do that, because you could come across as, you know, just being hateful and angry and mean, and then you're saying you grew, but we don't hear that you grew. So, you know, you have to be, you know, very careful with how you do that. Also, I'm going to be doing speaking engagements at the public library, where my book has just been accepted in the New York Public Library. Also, I wanted to mention, too, that I'm an award-winning author. So, yeah, my book has been chosen for the best memoir of 2019. For fall of 2019,
great.
So I'm really excited about that. Yes, and so the speaking engagements are, you know, I'm also speaking with the youth and probably doing a kind of like a book tour, book signing with the youth in Harlem, and that'll be coming up for the month of February for Black History Month. So, yeah, there's a lot of projects going on, a lot of interviews, and you know, I'll also be doing a TV interview while I'm out in California. So a lot of I'm just excited and humbled. I'm very thankful that people are really taking a liking to hear, one, what a Black man has to say, and two, you know, what I'm saying just as a man, because some of the biggest books that have been released lately from people of color have been from women, you know, Michelle Obama, Taraji P. Henson, and the rest of them, you know, have written very compelling books, and they were telling about their narrative and their story, but men shy away from that. And so, you know, I chose to do the opposite. I chose to go out there and just, you know, share my vulnerabilities, share my life lessons, and share these growing pains to really, you know, help all people. You know, it doesn't matter about color, creed, because spirituality is much deeper than that. Spirituality is just all about the essence of a soul being illuminated. And so that's what I was, that's my mission. That's what I'm all about, you know, being that agent of change and not just talking about it, but getting out there in the trenches and actually doing it.
So where can people find you if they'd like to contact you about maybe a conference or invite you out to talk to some young men? How can they contact you?
Oh, please, and definitely contact me. That's what I'm all about. They can reach me on my website at www.bilalalaji.com, and that's BILALALAJI.com. There is a form to fill out there, and I will, you know, my team and I will get right back to you just to find out the particulars of what you're looking for so that we can itemize it and, you know, just curtail it to your event. I can also be reached on Twitter. So that's at Alaji, A-L-A-J-I, Bilal, B-I-L-A-L. And I'm available on Facebook as well. So I really want the listeners to get out there and purchase the book. It's on Amazon. It's an Amazon bestseller, and it's also an award-winning book. I think you will really enjoy all of the life lessons in the book, and it'll really just spark a lot of new thinking and feelings. You'll go through a definite range of emotions with the book. But nonetheless, I think you'll come out whole, and you'll come out feeling, you know, a sense of peace. And for all you listeners who don't really got time to sit down and get into a book, there's an audio book. It's narrated by the author. I narrate the book. It's very, very entertaining, and I think you'll really enjoy listening to the audio book as well. You can find that on Amazon or on the website.
Okay, and we definitely will be promoting that. I appreciate you being on our program today, and definitely like what you're doing for our listeners out there and supporters. Yes, this broadcast will also be on Vertical Life Magazine, but will also be available later today. If you didn't hear the live version, you can hear the tape version, and we will continue to promote the programs as we always do. And I wanted to remind everybody about the upcoming Writers Retreat in Ireland this summer 2020, sponsored by Black Chateau Enterprises. And this is a retreat for writers, okay? And you can get all the details at www.verticalalliance.com. That's vertical with a K, and then it's /vertical creative ventures. So I'm looking forward to more on you. If you have any questions, you can contact me at info@verticalalliance.com. I want to thank our listeners, thank our sponsors, and thank you, Bilal, for being on the program.
Yes,
we look forward to having you again
soon.
Thank
you for having me.
Yes, I look forward to having you again, definitely. We have some youth social enterprises in Arizona that we're going to have this summer. So I'm definitely putting you on my list to contact you about some of those. Yes, most definitely. Because I would love to see something where it's just the boys and the men. I would love to see that, having the dialogue and starting
somewhere. Let's make that happen. That's right. Let's make that happen.
All right.
I would like to leave on this note, though. The last line of the book says, if the reality you see is not what you desire it to be, then simply proclaim, this ain't my life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for being on the program. And I'm looking forward to reading some more of the book, but I'm also looking forward to have a copy of the book for anyone that's listening, or if you hear the recorded broadcast, if you contact me, I will send you a copy of the book. Thank you
copy. Oh, they got to hurry up and get that.
They really do, because it's a great read. It's an easy read, and it does flow. So you got to, you know, contact me, okay? So so this
that
has
is
been
awesome.
Living Vertical Radio. Thank you so much. Our guest has been Bilal Alaji, CEO of Illustrious Shoes and author of This Ain't My Life. Available at Amazon right now. And thank you, everybody. Thank you, Bilal.
Thank you.